I apologize in advance if I take a phone call.
Sure. All right, so just to see where we're holding, we're on Daf Yutes Amud Aleph. We're making some nice progress here. And we're up to Gufo, which is about 10 lines down from the top. First word in the line is Lekaima. Now, in order to appreciate Gufo, let's just quickly recap what we did last time. And we were focused on the Shita of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir is of the opinion that when the Edom testify on a Shtar She'eino Mekuya, that Ksav Yadenu who's there, they're not believed. And the Gemara suspects that maybe Rabbi Meir completely rejects the principle which is so well accepted of Hapesh also Hapesh Hitir. After all, it's only through the Edom that we know that this Shtar is a valid Shtar, because otherwise the Chachamim made a takana that the Shtar needs Kiyum, which means that the Shtar itself is really basically not worth the cloth it's written on until you have kiyum hashtar, because we assume the shtar is assumed to be guilty until proven innocent in this case, and without kiyum hashtar we assume that the shtar is a forgery. Now the Edom come in and we have no other independent evidence, and they say, yeah, we signed the shtar, that's true, but the shtar is invalid, and this should be a classical peshas or peshit. So the Gemara now tries to explain Rabbi Meir A, B, and C. A, in the case of Psuliedus Hayinu, and the Gemara says that a Malve will never allow a Shtar to be signed by two Edom without first checking out the Edom. So the Chazaka is that the Malve did his due diligence, and he determined that the Edom are Ksher. Otherwise, he has really basically thrown all his money like Karen Atzvi. He's just completely worthless. He doesn't have a shtar if the Edom aren't kshir. So if we can't believe the Edom that they were psula. Number two, the Edom say they were ketan. Well, we have another chazaka, and the chazaka is that every shtar is written if both the malv and the lofa, or the makne and the kona, are all gdolim and not ketanim, and therefore, once again, the Malva is not going to allow the Shtar to be signed by two Edom unless he knows that they're Gedolim. So the argument, the claim of the Edom that they were Ketanim when they signed the Shtar is a very flimsy claim. And we're going to throw that out. But what about Anusim Hayinu? So if the Edom say Anusim Hayinu Machmas Mamon, then everybody agrees they're not believed. Even the Chachamim of Rameh, because Ein Odom Esim Atzmo Rasha. However, what if they claim Anusim Hayinu Machmas Nefashos? So the Gemara raises a very strange havamina. We spent a little time on it last time. And that is that if a person puts a gun to your head and he says your life or sign this shtar and falsify your edus, then he should rather give up his life than sign the shtar. Very difficult. The Gemara immediately rejects it and says, no, you have to give up your life for only three averas, and signing a shtar is not one of them. And therefore, if this pair of Edom had come to the Rav, to the Chacham, and asked them, what should we do? It's either our life or sign the Shtar. The Chacham would have instructed them to sign the Shtar. So why then does Rav Meir say that the Edom are not believed to claim Anusim Hayinu, they haven't Peshas or Peshahitir? So the Gemara now introduces a statement of Rav Huna. And that's called Moda B'Shtar Sheksava. What's the discussion of Rav Huna? And what is Moda B'Shtar Sheksava? We said over and over again that although the Torah relies on Shtar, the Chachamim do not rely on Shtar. They insist that in order for a Shtar to be valid, it's got to be validated. How do you validate a Shtar? You Mekayim the Shtar. And you prove and authenticate the two signatures on the Shtar. Okay? By the way, just in American culture here, gentlemen, have you ever heard of John Hancock? No? That's real American culture.
I don't know what you do, but I have heard of
it. You'll impress the Americans if you say John Hancock. John Hancock is another way of saying a signature, because on the Declaration of Independence it is?
I think so.
Or maybe the Brits are not good at that declaration. I don't know.
How's your tea, Rabbi?
Because the teapot wasn't the teapot. But anyway, John Hancock is like the big signature on the Declaration. So that became a catchphrase in American culture. So the Eidim have to be Mekayim the Shtar. Otherwise, the Rabbanim say the Shtar is not worth anything. Oh, but what happens in the following case? The Lova himself, who stands to lose because the Malva produces the Shtar, he admits that the Shtar is a valid Shtar. Let me just ask you a little bit of a quiz question here, if you don't mind.
The Lova is the borrower.
Who actually writes the Shtar? I don't mean physically, but who commissions the writing of the Shtar? Is it the Malva or the Lova? It's a little tricky here. It's the Lova, yeah. And what does he do after the Shtar is written and signed? What does he do with that Shtar?
Takes it.
And what does he do with it after he takes it?
He gives it to the Malva.
He gives it to the Malva. What does he get in return? It's a swap. Right? He gets money from the Malva, right? And he gives the Malva the Shtar. So the Malva gets the Shtar, and the Lova gets the money. Now the Lova comes along and he says, you know what? I wrote the Shtar, I had the Shtar written, there's no counterfeit here in the Shtar. I admit the truth. He's a truthful guy. But I paid back the loan. That's called parati. Now, normally, the Torah relies on something called a migu. In the case of a shtar sheinu mekuyam, where the only source for kiyum is the lova's hodah, the lova has a perfectly fine, solid migu. Because let's trust him when he says, I paid back the loan. Migu, if he was a really good liar, he would have said, Mizuyaf, he would have said the whole shtar is a forgery and I never borrowed the money. We have no independent proof to establish the validity of the shtar. It's a shtar sheinu mekuyam. So here we have the principle of Rav Huna, which we saw here on the top of the page. And that's about, I shouldn't say the top, about 10 lines down from the top of the page. The Amar Rav Huna, Amar Rav, Moda b'shtar sheksavo ein tzorech lekayim. Which means the following, that the very moment the lover, the borrower who stands to lose, admits that the shtar is a valid shtar, there was no counterfeit, there was no forgery, he commissioned the writing of the shtar, from that moment on, the shtar has the status of a shtar mekuyam. Now, if a lover says against the malva, parati, and the malva produces a shtar, and that shtar is mekuyam, the lover is not believed. Why is that so? Because when you pay back a loan, what do? You take back the shtar. It would be idiosyncratic for a person, a lova, to pay up the chov and not take back the shtar. Therefore, when the malva produces a shtar against the lova is not believed to say parati. Ah, he asked me the question, but the lova should be believed because of the migu. He could have said mezuyah, meaning that the whole shtar is a forgery. There's no kiyum on the shtar. The only kiyum on the shtar is from the lover's own admission. So believe him when he says parati. Excuse me. Because he has a migu, he could have said mezuyah. Comes along Rav Huna, the name of Rav, and he says we cannot accept this migu. Why can we not accept the migu? Because the malva is holding on to the shtar. And the lover admits it's a valid shtar. So you'll say to me, well, okay, usually a lover will not pay up his chov until he takes back the loan. Let me ask you this, Brian. Did you ever have a case that the lover, the borrower, forgot to take back this? There is such a case.
I'll tell you what happened.
Tell me what happened.
My son's wedding.
Wedding?
I covered the whole cost of the wedding. Because the other side were all from overseas, and I said, give a check as a deposit. All right, so gave a check for 60,000 shekels. And the night of the wedding, everybody paid, like good mechutani, and everybody paid. And I forgot to ask the guy back for the check.
You forgot to ask
the
again
guy
what?
I didn't take my calls for a week, I couldn't get hold of him.
I didn't hear something about the check. I didn't catch it.
I didn't take back the check. It's a store, right? It's the same as a store.
Oh, wait a second. The check was... What was the check? The check was sort of like a... who was holding on to the check?
The caterer.
You're saying the caterer was already paid up, but he had your check.
He still had my check.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
That could be a problem.
A week after the wedding, Friday morning, I checked my bank account because I was under a lot of pressure on my bank account. I said, I'm another 60,000
in overdraft, in a minus. Meaning that the caterer went ahead and cashed the check. after he got paid.
And I'm an accountant, huh?
Is that good for the Jews that you're an accountant, or bad for the Jews?
Bad. I'm just saying, I'm a bad accountant. Anyway.
Oh, I see what you're saying. If you were a good accountant, you never would have let that go by.
You were closed.
It was Friday.
They sent the manager in to go and stop the check, but still, the check had been passed on to a third party. It wasn't the original person. And by the Sunday, I said, if I don't have the check, I'm going to go and call the police. 1 o'clock, the check was returned to me. I've still got it in the file, but I was very lucky.
The original check? Another with your joint haircut.
Another 200 people had their checks cashed.
It was a big, from the same guy?
Same guy. Caterers were caught. People were caught.
So that's the thing. You got to take back the check. Yeah, that's the bottom line.
So if it could happen to me.
Rov gan v'Yisrael.
I was lucky. But while you were saying it, I was just thinking of this case. It was a case.
So therefore, because a person should not do such a thing, the halacha assumes that a person doesn't do such a thing. But nevertheless, sometimes you prove my point.
Enjoying yourself, right? It's 2 o'clock.
Right.
In the
so you prove my point.
And the band wants a check, and this person sure has no defense.
Right. There may be any number of reasons why you didn't take back the check.
Right.
I was tired.
Okay, you were tired. I can think of another 10 different reasons why a person failed to take back the check. So therefore, the question becomes, why all this hype about the fact that the Malva is still holding on to the shtar when the Lova says he paid up? And especially if the Lova has a mitzvah. So what I heard from my Rebbe, Zichron Levracha, and it's written up, it was a Yahrzeit shir he gave, you know, Shirum L'Zecher Abamar, it's written in that sefer. He said that we have to reinterpret this business about shtar chaviyotcha, my boy. It's not just some sort of an umdana, some sort of a premise and a circumstantial evidence. It's built into the shtar itself. The shtar testifies in the hands of the malva that this shtar was never paid up. Why? Because if the shtar was paid up, the shtar becomes what's called a shtar pasul. It's an invalid shtar. For example, I'll give you an example. Let's say the lova says to the malva, you know what, I'm paying you back, but you keep the shtar, because tomorrow I may have to take another loan from you. So why should we go through the whole hassle of rewriting the shtar? Again, this is something in the Gemara's time was very common. Gemara says, no, you can't reuse the shtar. That's called a shtar shen nimchal shibudo, which means the shibud was already used up because he already paid up that chov. If now he wants the contract on a new loan, they have to write a new shtar. But basically, the bottom line is that once you pay up a chov, the shtar is pasul. And paradoxically, that principle works in favor of the malva to the detriment of the lova. Because once the shtar is in the hands of the malva, it testifies on anything that's necessary to give a hechsher to the shtar. The shtar will tell you everything you have to know to make itself kosher. And Daniel, maybe you remember this. I gave an example of a tudat hechsher, like you go into a restaurant. Basically, you know, if you're nervous, you know, if you're anxious about kashrus, you know, you could start asking a million and one questions. You could ask about the kalim, and you could ask about the toloim, and you could ask about the trumas and maestros, and you worry about the meat and where it's coming from. Endless amount of issues in kashrus. And there's one answer. That answer is that document that's up on the wall. That's a tudat hechsher. Because the tudat hechsher has to calm you down about any possible kashrus issue that could come up. If it doesn't, then it's not worth the paper on. So the Torah says that we rely on a shtar. A woman is known to be married. She was married. And now she comes and she says she got a divorce. What's the proof? How can we marry her off to someone else? Maybe she's still married to the first guy. The answer is she has the get. She has a shtar in her hands. The shtar in the hands of the bala shtar is absolute testimony on any issue that could ever be raised against the shtar. And therefore, the lova is not to believe to say parati, because if that be the case, he's telling us that the shtar is invalid, it's possible. And he's not believed to do so as long as the malva is holding on to the shtar. Now, what happens if the malva drops the shtar and you and I find it in the streets? we can't return the shtar to the Malv. Why? Because that gives him the ammunition to collect the chov, and we don't believe that he's the Baal Shtar anymore. He's not holding on to the shtar. As long as he's holding on to the shtar, he's the boss. He can say anything to be Maksha the shtar, and the shtar testifies on his behalf to support his claim. Now we have Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says two Edom come in to Beis Din, and they say, yeah, we signed on that shtar, but we were ketanim, or we were psulim, or we were anusim, and the shtar is invalid. Rabbi Meir says we can't believe the Edom. Why? What about Pesh also, Pesh Yidin? The answer is, the very moment that the words Ksav Yodenu who's come out of their mouth, the shtar becomes a valid shtar. Once it's a valid shtar, their edus is signed and sealed. They can't say a word about this shtar, not to add or subtract, not yay nor yay or nay or yay, to have any impact on the shtar. And that is basically the story of Rabbi Meir and the story of Rav Huna in the name of Rav. Rav Huna in the name of Rav and Rabbi Meir are basically saying one and the same thing. That once the Baal Dover admits, he's called technically the Mischayev, the one who stands loose. He admits that this shtar is valid, there's no hanky-panky here, there's no counterfeit. At that point, the shtar is mekuyam. And all the laws of kiyum hashtar, all the laws of hashtar mekuyam kick in. The shtar will testify that everything is kosher v'yosher in favor of the malv because he's the baal shtar holding on to the shtar. Migu is going to be meaningless. All the stories that the lov is going to tell me about why he forgot to take back the shtar or this, that, or the other thing, none of that is going to cut ice. It's not worth a cent. Why? Because the Malva has a shtar makuyim. What do you mean a shtar makuyim? Where's the shtar makuyim? Because the Lov himself was makayim the shtar. Because the Edom themselves in Rameh's context was makayim the shtar. Is that clear? That's just basically a recap of what we did last time.
One thing, that if somebody lost, a shtar was found in the street, or at a gate, or a shtar, or whatever it was, or a check, or whatever it is.
Right.
You don't give it back to the person who wrote it.
Correct.
To the person who it's written out to. You give it to the person who signed it.
Well, no, I wouldn't say that. It's a little more complicated than that. Basically, Bezdin's going to hold on to that shtar and see if with the course of time, the passage of time, we can somehow clarify with evidence exactly what the story is with the shtar. And that's a very long and complicated sugya in Masechta Bava Metzia about returning shtaros. Okay then? But for sure, we're not going to immediately return it to the Malv, because that gives him the arsenal, you know, the weapons, the arsenal to collect that shtar.
If he does go and collect it, he's dishonest.
Well, again, let's say the Malv dropped the shtar and he himself found it, or let's say the Malv's good buddy or his best friend, you know, his son found the shtar and he gave it back to the Malv. The Malv goes ahead and collects the shtar. Now the issue is, is the Malva telling the truth or not? If he's a no good liar, he's a thief, he knows he got, the money was paid for him, and yet he's using the shtar, so he's a thief. He may get away with murder because he's holding on to the shtar. If he's an honest person and he already received payment to the shtar, he'll rip up the shtar or give it back to the loaf as a receipt. Okay, now we'll start Gufa. So we're on Daf Yutes Amud Aleph. Max, you came a little late, so I want to show you where we're up to. Look for the word Gufa. It should be around here somewhere. Okay. See, I'm a Yemenite. Amar Rav Huna Amar Rav. Moda b'shtar sheksavo ein tzarech l'kaimo. Which means, again, just to reiterate, the lova is not believed to say, I pay back the chov, even though he has a migu, because the only basis for his claim is the migu that he could have said mezuyah, but he's already removed that claim. He's already canceled that claim by saying, I admit that I wrote the shtar. There's no falsification of signatures here. It's an authentic shtar. And now the malv is holding on to an authentic shtar. The lov is not believed. Amalei Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman says to Rav Huna, Ginuve ganuve lomalacha. In other words, when somebody hides the truth and says, you know, this is my statement, when really it came way before him. You know, that we divide up the Chachmei HaTalmud into two groups, the Tanoim and the Amoraim. So if an Amora says a halacha, which was already formulated way before him by a Tana, and he doesn't mention that this was originally said by the Tana, that's not okay. That's a technical foul. It's a kind of gneva. Why? Because a person has to give credit to the original Shita. So therefore, Rav Nachman says to Rav Huna, why are you telling me that this statement was Rav's statement? What are you hiding behind Rav? Why don't you admit the truth? It's really Rav Meir, who came before Rav. Isviralach ki Rabbi Meir, if you've adopted the position of Rav Meir, and that's why Modim Shtashik Savo ain't Tzarch L'Kaimo, is Ema Halacha ki Rabbi Meir. You should have said Halacha ki Rabbi Meir. Amalei, so Rav Huna responds and he says, Umar Hechisvirle. Now, once we're on this topic, I'm curious, Rav Nachman, what do you hold? I accepted Rabbi Meir because I heard from Rav that Modim Shtashik Savo ain't Tzarch L'Kaimo. What's your opinion on this matter? The very fact that you're pressing for this admission on my part that it really is Rabbi Meir, because we always know that if a Meir argues with the Chachamim, we pass like the Chachamim. Are you implying with your attack against me that you passing against Rabbi Meir? You passing like Chachamim? Or Malay, it's absolutely the case. Ki asu lekamon ledina, when a malva comes in front of me with a shtar, and he wants to collect, and I'm the judge, I'm the dayan, I'm reading Lahu, I say to him, or to every malva, he says it in plural, it's a standard statement, zilu kaimishtaraihu, go ahead and be makaim your shtar, and then chusu ledina, then stand in front of me for judgment. Until such time as you're makaim the shtar, forget it, you're wasting your time. There's no way, no how that I'm going to allow you.
So you have to bring an Adam?
Correct. Again, let's just go over that very quickly. Aaron, I think you'll remember this. There are three ways of being Mekayim the Shtar. One is that the Adi Ashtar come in and they recognize their own signature. Number two other Adam could come in and recognize their signature. Possibly the Dayanim themselves could recognize the signature. And number three, we can compare their signatures to another shtar that was already makuyam in the past. Because when a shtar is makuyam, what they do is they put on it something called a henpeh. Today you would call it notarized. You know, you've seen the red ribbon or whatever it might be. So in those days, they put a henpeh in which Bezdin signs the three dayanim that we were makayim the shtar.
Okay. You could compare that to another shtar.
Now, when I said to you before that the Dayanim could recognize these signatures, so you know, you could laugh at me. Like, what are the chances, you know, statistically, that the Dayanim themselves would recognize these signatures?
Right.
So I just want to point out, just a point of interest, today, in Batei Din, that's absolutely common, that the Dayanim would recognize the signatures. Why is that so common today? Because every Beis Din comes along with its Eidim built in. There are like professional Eidim, so to speak. Just like, for example, in a get, the Dayanim have their professional scribe, you know, the Sofer, and he's the stand-in Sofer. You know, he's there all the time. They have the Sofer. They also have Eidim. Why is it so important that Beis Din have their Eidim? First, for convenience sake, but more than that, they don't know who to trust. So they have their two trustworthy witnesses, you know, Yankel Beryl and Shmerel, you know, and they know these guys are kosher Eidim. So it's quite frequent that the Eidei Ashtar are the same Eidim, in that Beis Din at least, over and over, time and time again. So therefore the Dayanim might recognize their signatures. It's not, you know, unusual that the Dayanim could recognize their signatures. Fine? So basically, what is Rav Nachman saying? Rav Nachman is saying that the halacha is like Chachamim against Rabbi Meir, and even if the party recognizes the signatures and admits to that, nevertheless, there still is a migu or a peshasar, and that has two repercussions. Number one, if the lover confesses that he had the shtar signed and everything is fine, but he says parati, he's believed. Number two, if the Eidim themselves identify the signatures, but they say, Anusim Ayinu, Ketanim Ayinu, Psuli Eidim, so you know they're believed, and in both these cases, the shtar becomes invalid. So therefore, Rav Nachman says, I advise the Malver, even before he comes to Din, to make sure he's got a kiyum on the shtar. That's the only way he's going to guarantee himself success in this case. Otherwise, Mr. Malva, you're wasting your time, you're wasting my time, you don't have a chance in a million to win this case. Because even if the Lova is the one who's Makayim Nishtar, he's going to be believed with a migu to say Parat. Even if the Eidim are Makayim Nishtar, the Eidim might tell us something else, another story that would invalidate the Shtar, the Eidim are believed. That's called a Peshasa Peshit. Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Rav, Ha'omer Shtar Amana Huzeh, Eino Neman. So Rav Moshe said, what does the word Amana mean? Like, let's take it apart in its shortest, right? Imun. Are you familiar with that word in modern Hebrew, Imun?
Like faithfulness.
Correct. What I do is, I have trust in you. So here's what happens. The Lover comes to two Eidim, and he commissions them to sign a shtar. The Eidim do exactly as told by the Lova. The Lova then, trusting the Malva, says to him, here, hold on to the shtar, lock it up in a drawer, and if I'll need a loan from you down the line, we won't have to run around getting Eidim and a scribe and so forth to prepare the shtar. The shtar is already pre-prepared. Everything is ready to go. But it's an amana because, after all, once the Lova gives the shtar to the Malva, what's he basically doing?
Obligating
him. He's giving the Malva the power to claim, if he wants to be dishonest about it, the chov that's written in the shtar. He's got a perfectly valid shtar with two Eidim signed on it. So the amana, the trust here, is that the Lova absolutely trusts, you know, blind trust in the Malva. Yeah, and says to the Malva, here, and excuse me, and he says to the Malva, here's your shtar. Maybe tomorrow I'll come to get the money, maybe in a week, maybe in a month. You hold on to the shtar.
Is that basically...
Did I say the Malva? I meant to say the Malva. Yeah. The Lova says to the Malva, you, Mr. Malva, you hold on to the shtar.
That's basically what Brian's check was. Like a deposit check, you haven't received the catering, yeah, but they deposited the security check.
Right, it's a shtar amana. It's basically a shtar amana. Now what happens when the caterer comes to cash the check, or when the malva comes and he says, you owed me money, here it is, I got the shtar. So the lover says, wait a minute, I only gave it to you in trust. It was a shtar amana. The lover's not believed. Why? Because once again, the shtar is in the hands of the malva. As long as the shtar is in the hands of the malva, it will disprove any claim. It will counter any claim on the part of anyone who wants to invalidate the shtar. Whether the invalidation is because it was parua, because it was amana, because the Eidim were anusim, any of those arguments that would place the shtar into jeopardy are completely out of the question. Not to be related. They have no value.
It's like a motzi mechaber al raya. Is that?
Well, in a sense, it's a motzi mechaber al raya because the shtar is in the hands of the malva. Is that what you mean?
Yeah,
I'm saying, in other words,
correct.
He's motzi in the shtar. You have to disprove the fact. In other words, the fact that he's holding it is right. Up to you now to somehow
right.
Disprove it otherwise.
Correct. And the greatest proof, by the way, that the shtar in the hands of the malva activates a tremendous wide scope of Eidus is from the Mishnah at the end of Bava Basra. The Mishnah at the end of Bava Basra tells me that the Eidim signed the shtar because of they were commissioned to do so by the Lova. They didn't even see the Malva give the money over to the Lova. In the language of the Mishnah, Kosvin shtar la Lova, afal pisha ein Malva imo. The Malva's not even here. So I get together two Eidim in this closed room, and they testify with a signature that I borrowed $1,000 from you. They don't even see you, let alone see you give me the money. It doesn't matter. As soon as the lova gives that shtar over to the malva, the edus on the shtar is activated on behalf of the malva, even though the edim never even saw the malva give the money over to the lova.
And you can write, in other words, and writing a shtar that way is a common way of writing it as well.
So that's the Mishnah. The Mishnah right, says exactly
it's not,
what
it's not that the edim see the act, it's just that you set up.
Is that the mischayev? The mischayev. Right, yeah. The mischayev, that's the key word here. The lamdish word is the mischayev. He commissions
right,
the writing of
right,
the shtar.
Right.
The one who stands to lose the shtar, right. To lose by the shtar. Afal pishein malvi imo. That's the power of a shtar. So the Gemara says, Omer Abiyudah Marav ha'omer shtar amonu huzeh eino nemon. Now, it's very interesting. The Gemara thinks that if Rabbi Yehuda quotes Rav issuing this verdict, this halacha, this principle, there's got to be a chiddush here. There's no chiddush here. The Gemara thinks that for sure the lova cannot claim that the shtar is the shtar amona. If the lova would be believed to say that the shtar is the shtar amona, that would undermine the whole institutional enterprise of shtar. On every shtar, the lova is going to say, shtar amona, I never got the box.
Right.
He can't be believed. So why did Rabbi Yehuda have to quote Rav, the hailing of Rav, to tell me halacha? I can never even doubt this halacha. It's the very basis, the foundation, upon which the whole concept of shtar is predicated. So the Gemara says, Dekamar Mar, Dekamar Man. In Rabbi Yehuda Marav's framework, who is claiming Amona? Ilema Dekamar Love, if the Love is saying that this was a shtar Amona, Pshita, for sure. The Malva has rights to collect the shtar, despite the claim of the Lova. Kol Kamine? Does the Lova have any nemanus, any credibility to say that this shtar is the shtar amona? V'ela, dekamar Malva. Wait a minute. The Malva is saying it was the shtar amona. Is Tavola Bracha. Zayge benched. The Malva is admitting, as an honest person, that this shtar is not worth the paper it's written on, because I never actually gave the chol. So what are you telling me he's not believed? Ela de ka'amri edim. It must be that it was the edim who assigned on the shtar who are testifying that this shtar is a shtar amon. I mean, the lova told him, write up this shtar, but you should know that I'm not getting any money now. I'm not taking any loan. It's just going to be in the hands, I'm going to trust the malva, in the hands of the malva. So Gemara says, can the Edim, should the Edim be believed to say it's a shtar amona? Iksav yodam yotzim makom acher. If we already have an independent kiyum on the shtar, pshita delo mehemni, there's no way that the Edim can testify anything that would add or subtract to the shtar. They've already signed the shtar. And we know that they signed the shtar. Ve'i enksav yodam yotzim makom. If we have no independent source of evidence to be makayim the shtar, except for their claim, Allah amai lo mehemni. Why shouldn't the Eidim be believed? They have a Pesha Asar and a Pesha Heat there. And again, we're back to the Sheet of the Chachamim.
I don't understand this. What was it? A Shtar Amona, so he's given to the Malva, and a week later he might actually make the loan. So how do the Eidim know whether this is pre-loan or post-loan?
The fact that the Lova told the Eidim that at this point I'm giving the shtar over to the Malva as an amana, that itself would passel the shtar. If you believe the Eidim. Do you follow what I'm saying?
So is that shtar amana is really not worth
anything. We're going to soon see, I don't want to let the cat out of the bag, that you're not even allowed to create such a shtar. It's a dangerous weapon. The halacha doesn't allow it. But at this point, the Gemara thinks that if the Eidim are the only source for Kiyum Ashtar, then they have a wonderful Pesha Asa Pesha Hita to give them credibility to say that this Shtar is a Shtar Amona. And that would reflect what we saw in that Mishnah, that the Chachamim of Rameir say that if the Eidim say Ksav Yadenu Zeh Aval, and they invalidate the shtar for reasons X, Y, and Z, they're believed, as long as the shtar is not a shtar makuyam. If the shtar is a shtar makuyam, their edus is complete, and kevan sheig and shuv and echoz or magid, they don't have no right to add or subtract to the shtar. So the Gemara says, I'm skipping the siman here, Amar Rava, li olam dika amar lova. Let's go back to our first possibility. That Rabbi Yudom and Rav is talking about a case where the Lov is the one who claims Shtar Amonu Zeh. And now you'll ask me, what's the chiddush? Of course, the lov has no reason, to think that the lov should be believed to passel the shtar and claim it's an amona. The answer is that the chiddush is kidder Rav Huna, the Omer Rav Huna Marav, modu b'shtar shiksavo. Ain't sarach lekaimo, meaning that since the lova himself, when he claims amanuze, is confessing to the authenticity of the signatures, correct? Then it already became a shtar makuyam, and if it's a shtar makuyam, the lova is not believed to in any way invalidate the shtar. We could have said in the Hava, I mean, if not for Rabbi Yehuda of Hunam Arav, that since it's only from the Lova's admission that we can validate the shtar is an Eina Makuyam, he has a wonderful migu, he could have claimed Mizuyov, he can now be believed to say Parati, or alternatively to say, I never got the money, it was a shtar amana. That's true up until Rav Hunam Arav, but Rav Hunam Arav says that once he admits, the Lova admits that the shtar is a valid shtar, meaning it's an authentic shtar, that's it. Now it's a shtar makuya, ball game over. There's nothing that the lover could say or be believed. But it's a chiddush here, because the chiddush is that we hold like Rabbi Meir against the Chachamim, and with all due respect to Migus and Pesha Asars and so forth, that's all out. Because Moda Vishtar Shiksovo, the shtar now has a kiyum to it. Once the shtar has a kiyum to it, it is an infinite, you know, omnipotent power, you know, in the hands of the Malach. Abai Omar, Abai wants to give another alternative. Maybe we want to avoid saying at this point that we reject the Chachamim of our Mishnah and we're going to have to accept the Shita of Rabbi Meir. Li Olam di Omar Malva. Now we just said if the Malva admits that this is a Shtar Amona, great. That's a wonderful Odas Bal Din. You know, we should give him Shishi for that because, you know, let him get the Aliyah for Shira Sayyam, you know. He deserves a bracha. Aseret Adibra. Okay, we might have to, you know, negotiate this, but whatever it is, it's what? I'm after Yona, I don't know. Psicha Vanila Vesa. For he certainly deserves a kavod. Oh. Believe it or not, the Malv is not going to be believed to say Shtar Amon. Because even Odas Bal Din has its limitations. It cannot be chav lachir. It cannot be at the expense of someone else. So watch what happens here. Reuven lends money to Shimon, and Shimon lends money to Levi. So Levi owes money to Shimon, and Shimon owes money to Reuven.
I tried building an app like this,
create an app for this, right? So this is called Shibud Rav Nosson. What does that mean? It means that now Levi owes money to Reuven directly. Levi never even saw Reuven. He never even saw the whites of his eyes. But the answer is that he borrowed money from Shimon, and that money came from Reuven. So therefore, Levi owes money to Reuven. Comes along Shimon, and he says to Levi that the shtar I'm holding on to is a shtar amana. Who's going to now take the loss? Not just Shimon. Shimon, we believe, because he's admitting that he never got the money. But now he ceases to be that link between Levi and Reuven. Reuven is now out. Because if this shtar is a shtar mana, then Levi has no recourse to claim his chov. I'm saying Reuven. The other way around. Reuven has no recourse to claim his chov from Levi.
He's still claiming from Shimon.
He can claim it from Shimon, that's fine. But he wants to claim it from Levi. Shimon doesn't have any bucks. So the only reason he's going to Levi is because Levi is the one who has money to pay. You follow me? But Levi says to Reuven, Lav bar dvarim didian, I don't recognize you. Who are you to claim a loan? I never got money from you, I don't know you, I don't know you from a hole in the wall. The answer is, but you got money from Shimon. So Levi says, what do you mean I got money from Shimon? I never got a penny from Shimon. And Shimon himself admits that he never gave me any money. He says it's a shtar amana. So that's called, in the language of the Shas, kigon shechav la'achirim. It's odas bal din to the deficit of someone else. And it's not believed. Ukir Rabbi Nassan. Rabbi Nassan is going to link Reuven with Levi. The Sanya, we have a Bryce, Rabbi Nassan Omer, Minayin Linoshe Bechavero. That means Reuven has a claim due to a loan against Shimon. Mana, he gave Shimon a mana, like 100 zuz, a massive amount of money. Bechavero, and Shimon, who took this loan, Bechavero, he has a claim against Levi, because he gave a mana to Levi. Minayin, how do we know Shemotzi and Mizeh? We can take the money out of Levi's hands and give it directly, Nosin Lezeh, back to Reuven, the original Malva, the first Malva. How do we know such a thing exists? How do we know that Levi has no right to turn to Reuven and say to him, Lav bal dvarim didi, I don't know you, I don't recognize you, I don't want to go to din with you, you have no leg to stand on, you can't sue me in a court of law? Talmud Lomar, because the Pasuk says, I'll read the whole Pasuk to you, Veheshiv es ashomo birosho vechamishoso Yosef olov. Okay, that part of the Pasuk you don't have. And then it says, V'nosan la'asher oshem lo. Now this Pasuk is talking about someone who steals and takes a shvur sheker and he has to add a chomesh. And the Pasuk is very strange. It says, V'nosan, and he should pay up if he does tshuva, or if he pays in addition to the keren, which is called Heshiv es ha'shomo, he also pays a chomesh, because it says chamishoso Yosef olav. And then it says v'nosan lasher oshem, and should give the money to whom he's chayv to give the money. That's basically what oshem means. Now, if he's giving the money back to his malva, meaning if Levi is now giving the money over to Shimon, it should have said v'nosan lasher hilvahu. He should pay back the one who gave him the loan, who extended the loan to him. But from the fact that the Torah doesn't say lasher hilvo, but rather it says lasher oshem lo, it means that there's someone else here in the picture, and there's some sort of a chiyuv keren to somebody else, and you have to return that keren to somebody else. Who is that person? That's going to be Reuven. And this is how we establish, we generate the principle of Shibuda Derab Nasan, which means that Reuven can collect directly from Levi. Oh, now let's go back to Rav. Rav says that Shimon is moded to Levi that the shtar is a shtar amana. Nu tavol abracha. Why shouldn't Shimon be believed? The answer is because Reuven's claim against Levi to collect his money is contingent on Shimon. And therefore, when Shimon, in a sense, confesses that the shtar is the shtar mana, that's to the detriment of Reuven. Rav Ashi Omar, now keep in mind, the Gemara went through three possibilities.
Rabbi, you can pass around the store like a check. I give you a check, an open check, you can go and give it to Aaron.
Sure.
Give it to...
That's because we paskin like Rebbe, Rav Yehuda Nasi, who says, Osios Niknos B'Mesira. The Chachamim of Rebbe say, no, you can't just pass over the check, you have to have an additional signature on the check. Why? Because who's this guy coming in with a check? He's not even on the check. Maybe he found it on the street. So, but what we paskin, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I can double check that, like the sheet of Revi, that Osios Niknos B'Mesira. They don't have to add anything to the check. As long as I give you the check or pass on the shtar, you now become the Baal shtar.
If it's an open check and it's got no name in it, you could pass it around like a banknote.
Okay. No, I was just asking halachically. You know, you're right in the world, in the secular
store
market, you're right. But what's the halacha?
I give a shtar and you're not negotiable or lo sachir or...
You know, Brian, we have a tendency of assuming that whatever we see out there is halachically valid. Like, for example, somebody told me that he thinks that a shtar doesn't have to have the signatures of the witnesses on it. He said to me, he's a lawyer by profession, he said to me, in the world of law, what happens is if two people are part of an agreement, they both sign on the document. And that makes it into a shtar. So I told him that halachically that's not so. there is something called an IOU note, which is called an halacha ksav yada. So for example, if I write down on a piece of paper that I signed below, Azariah Berzon borrowed $100 from you, Brian Levin, and then I sign it and I give it to you, there are no edim on the shtar, it could be that you can collect that chov based on my signature. But that's not really a shtar. And the proof that it's not a shtar is that you only have recourse, Brian, to collect from me, Azariah Berzon. But let's say I have no funds to give you. You can't collect from Aaron when I sold my property to Aaron, meaning there's no shibud here. For a shibud, you need a shtar. And a shtar requires the signature of two edim. So I'm just saying, you know, we have a tendency of assuming that everything out there is the way the halacha works. To a large extent, I think it works the other way around. You know, with, maybe I'm being kind of... obnoxious when I say that I think they got it from us. You know, a lot of what law has developed, I think somehow through the centuries came from our Torah. I mean, it's amazing how much of this is still contemporary, and this was written the way 1600 years ago. You know, we have a very sophisticated legal system. Anyway, so again, what we've gone through is two cases. We had the Lover testifies that it claims that it's a shtar amona. He's not believed, and that's because modu shtar shiksovo ain't sarach lekaimo. Then we had the malveh who says, I admit that this shtar I'm holding on to is a shtar amona. He's not believed because of shibud of Rav Nosson. And now we have one last possibility to say that the edim are the ones who are claiming shtar amona and they're not believed, and that's Rav Ash. And here's where the going gets pretty fascinating. Rav Ashi Omer Li Olam Deka Amri Edim. In truth, the statement of Rav Yehuda Marav is a case where the Edim come in and say it was a Shtar Amona. The Lover told us it's only a Shtar Amona, and that's when we signed the Shtar. Ubi Ein Ksav Yodom Yotzim Mokom Acher. The only way we could be Mekayim the Shtar is through these Edim, so they should certainly be believed with a Pesha Asa Pesha Hitim when they say the Shtar is a Shtar Amona. Now you're asking me, Amaylo Mehemne, why shouldn't we believe the Edom? They have a Peshas and Peshahitir, Kidder of Kahana, Tiomar of Kahana, Osir Loli Adam, Sheyashe Shtaramana Vesof Beso. The entire enterprise of a Shtaramana is absolutely against the halacha. It is absolutely prohibited. Mishum Shenemar, a Pasuk of all places in Eov. Al tishkan bi'olecha avla. We're not allowed to have something which is a weapon that's an avla. An avla means it's a terrible, it's a very dangerous possibility. You know, could you imagine if you were into the whole, we'll call it chesed scene, if you had your own gemach, let's say, for example, right? I'm not talking about a professional moneylender, but let's say you have your gemach. My wife and I used to run a gemach. In memory of her grandfather, his name was Rabbi Yomin Belov. And imagine you've got a whole drawful of shtaros of people who owe you money because it was an interest-free loan, but at some point they have to pay back the chov, otherwise they deplete the money in the gemach. One of the shtaros in that whole drawer is a shtar amona. You're not going to remember that. In other words, it's a very dangerous thing, even from the perspective of the malveh, if he's an honest person, to hold on to a shtar amona. So you and I would say, well, the lover trusts the malveh. The malveh is very touched by the fact that he's entrusting him with a very expensive shtar, you know, a shtar that testifies for 1,000 or 10,000. And the malveh is on board. Everybody's happy over here. The lover is happy, the malveh is happy. Nobody's squawking. The halacha is squawking. Why? Because al tishkon bi'olecha avla. Don't bring into your house a dangerous thing. You yourself, Mr. Malva, may forget somewhere down the line, and you're going to pull out this shtar and say, hey, wait a minute, this lover never paid me back. I have no record that he ever repaid the chov. Little do you remember, you've long forgotten that this was a whole amana business.
Are you going to be desperate for money?
So the Gemara therefore says that if the Edom say Amana, meaning we signed an Ashtar Amana, that basically incriminating themselves, because the Edom had no halachic right to sign on Ashtar Amana.
Generally, why would that be written, Ashtar Amana?
Again, because they want to save themselves. Let's say, for example, again, it's hard to...
Just sounds like a strange thing.
No, I'll tell you why. Again, it's hard to imagine this, but writing a Ashtar is a whole to-do.
So you're saying if you just had the opportunity and people were there, you...
Sometimes a person needs money immediately.
Right.
For whatever reason. Either he's got to pay back debts, so he's being sued, or he has a wonderful business opportunity. He needs cash, and he doesn't have the cash.
Right.
So he saves himself the whole hassle of running around, getting a cloth, getting a sofa, getting two Edom.
He comes to the big city and he has an opportunity in the state of
city. Excellent. He's in the big city, he comes from the small towns, you know.
Okay.
My father came from a town called Plisa, which is right near Vilna. So once in a while, they went into the big city, Vilna.
I'll
Vilna was the big city.
Right, I'll set up a couple of these shtaros. I have them when I need them.
When I need them, I won't have to.
And I'll hand
that's
them
called
over.
A shtar.
Right, okay.
Again, if you trust the malva, because you really have to have full trust. That's why it's called a shtar mana. So the halacha is opposed. The halacha doesn't want to mess around.
Then this mana would be in the hands of the... There's...
It's in the hands of the malva. Well, why are you laughing? I mean, it's in the hands of the Malva. No, are you questioning that? If maybe I'm wrong,
I'm
tell me why.
I'm just trying to think of the, and also just the Maisa, how it would get into the hands of the. It's one thing to have it written, but that you would hand it over to the.
That's the Amon element. In other words, the Lobos says
that part. I'm saying the Maisa.
Lock it up in put it in a drawer in the lock and key. Only to use it when I need the money.
I'm just trying to case that. I'm just.
It's like when I was a kid, they used to say, "Wire me the funds." Yeah. I don't know if they still use that phrase.
They don't.
They don't. So I'm dating myself. But what we used to do is we used to get, a certain bank account number.
Yeah.
And if you want to wire me funds, there even today I think there are ways that you maybe they don't call it wire you funds, but there are ways of transferring money.
Western Union,
but it really cuts out a lot of the red tape. In the old days, back in the time of the Gemara, they in order to cut out the red tape, they wanted to create this institution called the Shtar Mono. And the Malva is holding on to the Shtar.
Right.
He's a trustworthy guy. He'll only use it if and when the Lova says, "I need the money immediately." But the Chalacha blocked. They wanted to create this enterprise. Too dangerous. That's why, by the way, we'll get to this later, I think, the Lova, once he pays back the Chov, the Malva has to give back the Shtar. Let's say, for example, in Brian's case before, he was so... tzehitzed with the chasana, he forgot to take back the check. The malva has to give back the check. That's also a violation of Al Tishkon
Biolech
Av. Because once again, the malva is holding on to a shtar parua that was already paid up. He doesn't remember that. He throws it into the hole, his whole bundle of shtaros, and comes over to the loaf and he says, "Why am I holding on to this shtar? Apparently, you never paid me back."
So, is there an iser lechatila to be an aid to a shtar amana?
Correct, and that's why the Edom aren't believed, because they're incriminating themselves. Remember, we said that Eino the Mesim Atzma Rasha undermines Edus, and therefore, if the Edom say, "Ksav Yodenu Zeval Anusim Ayinu Machmas Mamon," we don't believe the Edom, despite the Peshas and Peshiti, because they're incriminating themselves. And Shtar Amana is also an incrimination.
And that's what they call it, it's like a scar that you got on the shelf.
Can't leave it on the shelf. You know it was paid back, get rid of it. Rip it to shreds. Now they have these machines, you put it in the machine. I don't know what they call it. I'm sure they have
a shredder.
Amar Rav Sheshes, and now we're on Daf, Yud Tes Amid Beis, Berei D'Rav Idi, Shmamino Mid D'Rav Huna. What do you say? Did I make a mistake? Midrav Kahana, Shmamino Midrav Kahana, Eidim Sha'omru Amona Hoyu Dvarenu, Einemon. The Edim say that the Lova asked us to write a Shtar Amona to give it over to the Malva, and the Malva is going to keep it until such time that the Lova gets the money from him. The Edim are not believed to say this because they are incriminating themselves. My timer, Kavan, the Avlahu, since writing a Shtar Amona is Avel, it's a distortion of the truth, and it's It's not to be tolerated. A'av lo chasmi. The Edom can't make themselves into Rishayim and claim that we signed on an avla, on a shtar that's an avla. It's a shtar that's totally rejected by the halacha. Ein adam mesim atzmo rosh. Amar Rav Yeshua ben Levi, asur li adam. Oh, this is what I mentioned to you before. Sheyash shtar parua b'sof beso. If the malve was paid up, the malva has to get rid of the shtar. Even if for some strange reason the lover forgot to get the shtar out of the hands of the malva, which was pretty stupid on his part, but the malva has to destroy the shtar. Mishum shenemar, the same pasuk, al tishkan bi'olecha avla. It's interesting that even with regard to a Sefer Torah, there are issues. If the Sefer Torah is pasul, not to keep it hanging around, because people won't remember that it's a posel or sefer, they'll use it. Correct. So that's why we have to make a simon in order to make sure that we know it's a shtar. I'm sorry, we know it's a posel or sefer Torah. Om Rav Yeshua ben Levi. Yeah, that we did already. B'marava mishmei derav omri. Back in Eretz Yisrael, they interpreted this pasuk and derived the same conclusion from a different part of the pasuk. Again, it's the same single pasuk in Eov, but now we're going back to the resha of the pasuk. If you take a look in the Torah Or HaShalom, you'll see the whole pasuk. It says, "Im oven biyadcha harchikehu," and then it says, "Val tishkan biolecha av." So let's go back to the resha of the pasuk. Im oven is an avera. Im avon biyadecha harchikehu, you know, chuck it away, throw it very far away. Zeshtar amon. This pasuk is alluding to an oven biyadecha, an aver in your hands, a very dangerous weapon of sheker. That's referring to a shtar amon. Ushtar pasim. What's a shtar pasim? Okay, so let's go through shtar pasim. Shtar pasim is also a violation of this pasuk of al tishkan v'olecha avlo, and that's called the shtar pasim. Shtar pasim, he says, is a shtar piyusim shu nichtav al davar shekish shemefayis is chaver shu ovo mamino vakish menesh yichtov shtar shu chayavlo v'ein kosvo kidei ligvos bo es hakosav v'shtar el kidei shemitok kach Yachshavu olav shuhu osh. Very interesting. A person would like to present himself as a rich guy. That gives him a certain esteem in the community. Sometimes he does something which is a little bit of false advertising in order to try to send out the word that ich bin a reicher mensch. So what does he do? He comes over to a friend of his and he said, "Look, we're good buddies. Do me a favor. Write up a shtar as if I lent you $10,000. And I'm going to hold on to the shtar. I never gave you a red cent, but it really looks like I'm a wealthy guy. Because if I lent you $10,000, you know, I got a shtar that's worth $10,000 of assets in my bank account." That's called a shtar pasim, and the word pasim means piyusim. Piyusim means when there's a close relationship and a person says to his beloved, "You know what? Do me a favor, write this shtar, and the shtar is a total bluff, but it's going to make me look as if I'm a wealthy guy, and I'm going to hold on to the shtar. Maybe I'll display it on my wall to indicate how much of a wealthy guy I am." Yeah, they used to do this. It's good for shidduchim, by the way, because if you want to marry off your daughter to a rich guy, or your son to a rich girl, the rich girl's father has all these fancy shtaris. It really looks like he's worth a bomb. Meanwhile, they're all shtar piyusim. Anyway, go ahead.
They used to give without value shtarot. They used to give all the thing to
a cold tea.
What? And they used to go to the banks and they used to discount them with the banks. The banks would give them the money. And eventually, it would happen when the day of reckoning came.
Pyramid.
It was a pyramid, yeah?
Uh huh. Sounds a little bit like a Ponzi scheme.
It was a Ponzi scheme.
So this is the source for anti-Panzi, you know, right here. Superstar you test some of
very
valuable. Ah, what we said before, that if the Malv already got paid up, he's not allowed to hold on to the shtar. That's Ava. Okay. Now, what I'd like to do with you is take a look at Tosfos. Okay. Now, which Tosfos do I really want to call to your attention? Let's go back to Yud Ches Amud Beis for a moment, and let's take a look at Tosfos Dibra Maskel Machmas Nefoshos Harei Elu Nemon. Do you have that?
Yes.
The Imtomar V'chi Amru K'tanim Hayinu O Nusim Machmas Mamon Hayinu Lehem Ne B'migu Di Amri Anusim Hayinu Machmas Nefoshos. Tosa says the following. You want to disqualify the claim of the Edim that they signed the false shtar because of a, you know, a threat of monetary loss, that's machmas mamon. Why not believe the Edim with a migu? Because they could have easily have claimed machmas nefoshos. Instead they said machmas mamon. We should believe them on that. Dabereisha, in the first case in the Mishnah, where they have a migu, namely when the shtar is a shtar shei makuyim, they all believe. Yesh lomar de ones machmas nefoshos lo shchiach. Tosfos comes up with what I think is a little bit of a dochuk answer, because he's saying it's very hard for us to believe that they were forced at gunpoint to sign the shtar.
That doesn't happen very often.
Right. But what I really like is the second answer, Tosfos.
It's not gunpoint, but you sometimes sign things because you owe somebody a big favor.
True.
I mean,
maybe it's not literally.
Well, if you owe that, if the person you owe the favor to is a mafioso guy, you better cough up, you know,
or
you'll find yourself floating down a river. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Doesn't necessarily mean your actual life is in danger, but it could mean that there's pressure, real pressure, right?
Right.
You might lose an ear, and that's
right.
From that Shabbos, that's that you can recall Shabbos just for one
ear. One ear, right?
A finger comes in the face.
But what I'm more interested in is the second answer. The ode, the Mishnei Eidim Lo Amrinan Migu. Now, there's the right pshat in Tosfos and the wrong pshat in Tosfos. I like the wrong pshat in Tosfos. The right pshat in Tosfos is that
two people
can't organize a Migu together. You know, that would be a scandal, because, you know, we're both going to do the following. We're both going to say, you know, the same lousy claim that doesn't have any real teeth to it, and we're going to both do this together as a cartel because they're going to believe us with the migu.
It's a kanunya.
It's a kanunya. But I think you can reinterpret this Tosfos. Now, what I'm about to tell you is not really pshat in Tosfos, I admit it, but I think it's the real answer to Tosfos' question, in my humble opinion. What does it mean that migu is not meaningful here because of Eidim? What basically they want to do here is they want to falsify the shtar and invalidate it. What they're doing there, for an effect, is they're contradicting two eidim of a shtar. Remember we said that when the malve holds on to the shtar testifies on his behalf for anything, any issue, any question that could come and cast dispersion on the shtar, on its validity of the shtar. That's called shnei eidim. Now they want to be believed to say anusim ayinu machmas mamon migu, that they could have said anusim ayinu machmas nefashos, and let's accept a migu. Tosa says that a migu against Edim is not believed. Edim are considered the highest level of nemanos, and therefore, even though a migu is usually generally considered reliable, but not in the case of two Edim. Okay, Rabosai, we'll stop here. And this is a very fascinating.
So you're not allowed to. I'm not allowed to. You only get some people to give donations. So you get 2,000 in the community. And it's all for the Aliyah. push it up. You're not allowed to do that.
Ah, you mean they're not really donating that money?
They collaborate. To get the third guy to give them money.
No, I think we should stay away from that kind of stuff. That's not for us. That's Dvar Sheker too. I mean, if you know, my father over some when he had to raise money in the shul, you know, they had JNF once a year, they had university once a year, they had these magbiot. So my father would always make sure that he was the first one to announce his donation. Because in those days, $100 was worth something. If Rabbi Berzon could give $100, and they knew his salary, then you guys have to give $10,000. You know what I'm saying? So my father was always the first one. He jumped up and he contributed. You know, he pledged, but not to falsify the pledge. You know, that's.